You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 5th of October. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Viv Govender from Rand Swiss. That resource stock, strong bounce yesterday, doesn't make sense to me. If we've got a moment, oil, $81. William McIntyre from Radisson Hotel Group. Leisure travel under level one, UK restrictions being lifted. Are the hotel groups expecting things to suddenly start booming? And Ernest Kaplan on the 10th commemoration of the death of Steve Jobs, which was 10 years ago today. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Some morning headlines. MoneyWeb Sasria has paid out 5.8 billion rand in July unrest claims so far. It's expecting a 3.9 billion lifeline from Treasury and says it will need more capital injection going forward. Business Day, MTN readies for US listing of IHS Towers. This is the Nigerian network tower company. Nigeria's got, MTN rather, holds about a third, looking to raise 8 billion. So, listing the US, 3 billion, I suppose, valuation for MTN. Not unimportant, but not a dial mover, really, in a massive sense. Morning markets, US is red overnight, S&P off 1.3, NASDAQ down 2.2. Asia, Sydney off 0.6, Tokyo down 2.8. Commodities red overnight. Gold, 1762, Brent, 8167, Rand, 1507. Opening call looking for a red open, about 120 points down. It's about a quarter of a percent, as Tencent trades 1.4% down in Hong Kong.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Checking out to Viv Govender from Rand Swiss. Viv, appreciate the early morning time. Yesterday, the Resi commodity index up 2.5%. This, as most commodities, were still weaker. I mean, was this just sort of a dead cat bounce, people closing their shorts? Or do you think there's some, perhaps, opportunity at these price levels?
I think there's probably opportunity at these price levels longer term. If you think about it, you know, in like a time period of multiple years, there probably is opportunity. I'm of the belief that, you know, all these infrastructure bills that, you know, are being proposed, including the ones in the US that are currently, you know, under a bit of, you know, doubt at the moment, will kind of go through over time because it just makes political sense. And that's going to probably be good for resources. So that probably is, you know, giving you some kind of, you know, base to the resource sector.
Yeah, I hear what you say there, and you know, maybe a bit of a sell-off now, but not the worry. The worry, perhaps, is oil above $81 a barrel. Goldman Sachs talking about $90. I mean, this is something that can certainly be hurting the global economy if oil carries on running as it is.
Oh, yeah, most certainly. But, I mean, you had to expect it. With the Biden administration in the U.S. basically taking away some of the power the U.S. has had for the last, you know, few years with regards to the, you know, shale production, which, you know, if you look at it, once shale production in the U.S., you know, really started coming just into full swing, well, it basically provided like a ceiling as to what the oil price was going to be like, because if the oil price was at 80-something and if shale production was normally proceeding as it should, you'd find a lot more wells coming into place and that would effectively, you know, destroy long-term, you know, prices. Right now, I think with the kind of environmental changes, you know, obviously it makes sense, you know, we can't really rely on fossil fuels, but it does indicate that, you know, without that kind of cap from the U.S., we probably are going to find oil prices as higher for longer.
Yeah, and higher for longer. And oddly enough, I mean, your colleague Gary was tweeting around how actually it's still some link to SAS. So a quick last question. The Facebook properties, Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, all went down last night for about 5 or 6 hours, not the end of the world. Facebook itself closed down almost 5%. As an investor, I suppose you just take this as a blip, or is this perhaps more concern or something that's going to happen? Sometimes tech fails, even if it happens to be on a humongous scale.
Well, you know, the stuff that's happening with Facebook right now with that whistleblower is pretty horrendous. I mean, the stuff that's coming out is also quite interesting. And a question does arise. I mean, you know, I remember, you know, we are old enough to remember when smoking basically the change, you know, when people stopped smoking because of the, you know, the concerns around it. And the kind of stuff that we are seeing around young people, especially young girls, with regards to Facebook and Instagram, yeah, I mean, you talk about higher suicide rates, actual health consequences, you know, other kind of consequences coming about. Is there actually a reason that, you know, taking a, something as like, you know, like exposure to your lungs versus watching a screen that, you know, also affects you negatively? Is there a reason definitely that in your mind that that doesn't, you know, become equivalent things? If it does, then Facebook probably faces a lot of issues because they apparently knew about the stuff.
Yeah.
That you would affect your kids that way, that you would, it did these kind of things to them. And decided, yeah, let's go ahead. Let's make some money.
Yeah. And in fact, there's a great article from Kevin Rose in the New York Times yesterday saying that, that it's not over for Facebook, but it might be the beginning of the end. Verf Govender, Rand Swiss, as always, appreciate the early morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting now with William McIntyre, Regional Director, Africa Radisson Hotel Group. William, appreciate the early morning this morning. I mean, we had the President take us down to level one Thursday evening, effective Friday. Reports that South Africa will be off the UK red list later this week. Before I get to the UK, locally, I mean, do you see from your hotels, as we change locally between the different lockdown levels, does that sort of impact your occupancies? As we move to level one, do you suddenly get more interest over the weekend and more bookings?
Morning, Simon. That's exactly what we see as the lockdown levels reduce down towards level one. We see quicker recovery than we did in the previous lockdown four, for example, to lockdown three. It took us 6 weeks to see some recovery, and the last time we saw that within a two-week period. So there's definitely an increase in the recovery time as we move between lockdown levels.
And your sense, is it business sort of weekday travel, or is it weekend and people travelling for some leisure?
Predominantly leisure at the weekends. We've seen some strong weekend business even in traditional commercial areas like Johannesburg and Sandton. Through the week, thankfully, there is an indication of increasing business levels Monday to Friday, and more meetings and events business starting to take place.
Okay, so events and even you know, perhaps some small conferencing starting to return?
Yes, definitely. And the lockdown regulations on the number of people that can gather inside and outside had a definite impact on the business. And as immediately as the numbers went up, the activities in the hotels went up accordingly.
Traditionally, what was the sort of, you know, how much of the occupancy sort of pre-COVID was local versus international travel?
Roughly, you could say it's a bit of a three-way split: local, commercial, and corporate and leisure travel. Government business is also very important to the industry. And then there was the other third was international travel. But of course, different destinations had different foreign arrival numbers. Cape Town particularly has suffered through the lack of international arrivals.
Has international started to come back yet? I mean, the UK still red-listed us. You could technically visit, but you'd have to go into quarantine on your return. Has it started to pick up even ahead of the UK perhaps lifting us?
In the last six, seven, 8 weeks, probably, we've seen a definite increase in German and French visitors and a very small trickle of American visitors. But the UK market remains key. It's been our top one or top two feeder market for many, many, many years. So
okay, so
it's a critical part of the puzzle.
I knew the UK was important. I didn't realize it was that important. I mean, in essence, what you're saying is we've lost our number one travel destination. And whilst they might not all rush back this weekend, it is potentially going to make a real difference as we recover from lockdowns.
It will make a difference. It will definitely make a difference. There's a huge pent-up demand, and we need it to open. It's as simple as that. We need the UK to open to try. And it's not even families, leisure, business, tourism. There's a lot of business gets done between the two countries. We need the UK open.
Yep, and I take 100%. The point. It's that pent-up demand. I mean, I know every time the president lifts our levels, I immediately travel locally, but I think there are a lot of people in the UK who are keen to avoid petrol queues and perhaps get some sunshine. We'll leave it there. William McIntyre, Regional Director, Africa Radisson Hotel Group. That's our question today on our LinkedIn and Twitter profiles. The leisure stocks in the JSE had a very strong Monday. And the question we're asking you, are you planning on traveling locally for business or holiday? Perhaps, yep, you're very keen, or nope, you're going to be staying at home. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Ernest Kaplan. Monday morning, I was sitting in studio remembering Steve Jobs, whose 10th anniversary of his passing is Tuesday, 5 October. Ernest, appreciate your time today. As I was pondering around Steve Jobs, you actually tweeted, and you tweeted two things. The one was his presentation, that launch for the iPhone in January of 2007, and the videos on YouTube, of course, and it is an astounding presentation. He was an astounding individual. I mean, you also make the point, and I quote you, that the iPhone is arguably the most successful product in history, and I think you're spot on. I mean, there's a compelling argument to say that it is.
Yes, Simon, thanks for chatting and hi to all the listeners. I mean, you know, I said to you earlier, just before we started sort of recording, I wish I was analyzing Apple aggressively when Steve Jobs was still alive, because I wasn't. Mm. I only started looking at them very closely a couple of years back. And he really had a great way of presenting his ideas. He always made it sound so simple.
Yep.
Yet you knew there were like thousands of hours behind the scenes happening to actually allow him to get up on stage and present those things. And yeah, what a visionary, what a great product. I still use it and use my iPhone every day. Fantastic. Never crashes and works well.
Well, it never crashes, works well. And he completely, I mean, prior to that, I remember trying my hand at smartphones and those horrible little keyboards which were too small for my sort of oversized hands and the like. And he fundamentally just created a new way of looking at it. And of course, out of that then also came the iPad, which in some ways is just like a large phone, really. But it's the simplicity of something that is so deeply complex and powerful.
Yeah, it is. And look, I also went through my fair share, the Nokia Communicator,
yes.
BlackBerry, you know, all those phones. I enjoyed them all. And I was actually quite late to get the iPhone. And I just didn't like the concept of touching the screen. I thought that's quite like strange. But after you've used it and it works for you well, and like he said, the problem with the keyboard is the different applications have to all use the exact same keyboard.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, on the touch screen, you can change the application or change the keyboard to suit the application, which I think is obvious now. But he obviously just had like the vision. So they did it, and they deserve all the success from it. you know, that they that they've reached from there.
And it has been success. I mean, I remember, I mean, Steve Jobs had left Apple a couple of months prior. Tim Cook took over. He had been the sort of supply chain maestro, because part of the process is if you're selling, you know, 70, 80, 90 million iPhones in a quarter, there's a lot of logistics behind it. There was a lot of concern around Tim Cook. He's bought out the watch. He's got the M1 chip. Services is now 20 plus billion. But looking at the share price, it is up 10x. Those, we lost Steve Jobs and a visionary and a great leader and product developer. But Tim Cook stepped into those shoes.
Yeah, look, I mean, he's done such a great job with Apple that when you look at Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett getting into Apple a couple of years ago, about 5 years ago, and having four times his money in 4 or 5 years. Who would have thought a company of that size would have gone up four times over 4 years or something? You know, it's just phenomenal. So they've really executed very well on just about everything. In fact, this call I'm speaking to you now through my earpods, which is a
giant. Of course, I even forgot about those.
And, you know, those came in as well. I mean, maybe that's not like the most revolutionary product, but gee whiz, man, it works so well. And it's always clear. And yes, you'll get the purists saying you get better earphones, but it just works and it pairs up nicely and there's no issues. So I think what Apple has taught me over the past couple of years is it's not always the best product that wins. It's the product that makes things easier and the easiest product that to use and it makes people smile. Those are the products that people just carry on using, not necessarily the one with the biggest horsepower or the most pixels or whatever the spec is. So I think what Apple does incredibly well is they package their products beautifully and they focus on that user interface. That's like they'll live and die by the user interface. And I think many companies can learn from that.
Yeah, I like that. It's not always the best part. It's also not something which I learned. It's not always first to market. I mean, the iPod wasn't the first. There were others around. Microsoft then tried the Zoom or the Zoom, which didn't work. You know, there were smartphones. The tablet was a decade before the iPad. It's not necessarily first. It's just making it an experience. That's what works. And to your point, you don't have to be the best. You don't have to be the first. You just got to make a user experience par excellence.
Exactly. My entry to Apple product was through the iPad in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was around the year that I think Steve Jobs died.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he had died already. In June, I think, or when was it? No, he hadn't. I bought it in September. Anyway,
just ahead of
I went to the shop. I looked at the iPad. It was the version 2. And I looked at the competing Android tablet. I can't remember which brand it was. There was no comparison whatsoever. Yeah. The iPad was smooth and slick with your finger. The other one was like jagged and like it just was. You couldn't even compare the two devices. So I bought the iPad and I've subsequently bought a few iPads and then the phone. I just don't have the computer yet. I'm still with Microsoft.
Yeah, well, they'll get you that in time. We'll leave it there. Ernest Kaplan, really appreciate your time down at Memory Lane. Thanks very much. That's it for today. Remember, the show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast available just after 7. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Nicole, Nabuchle, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contribution. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.